It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss legislative priorities and bills advancing in the Assembly with first-term Republican State Representative Angie Sapik of Lake Nebagamon. The 73rd District is in the northwest corner of the state, includes Superior. Call in with a question, share your comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Sapik, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your first term, Representative, new voice here in our program. What are your top priorities for the legislature when it returns after the new year for more floor votes?
That is a great question. Everything that we've done so far has been really allocated by time. So, of course, in the very beginning, you're 6 months, you're married to the budget. You do a lot of other things as well, but the budget is the priority. So right now I'm working, my number one priority right now is I'm working on a whitetail population packet of bills, and I'm anticipating to have those to be completely finished writing and hopefully into committee by January.
Can you give us a little preview of what those bills would do?
So we have a real problem in northern Wisconsin and northwestern Wisconsin with predation on whitetails. And over the last 20 years, the harvesting of whitetails has plummeted. I would say probably close to 50% of harvest numbers compared to 2000. And we're seeing a lot of, you know, promising reports on this year things are going to be better. And then it declines a little bit more. But I think that people have, and not my constituents, because they're paying attention, but I think that a lot of politicians and potentially even maybe the DNR and some conservationists have sort of dropped the ball on looking at the big picture of the whitetail population. So we're going to put some bills forward that really help grow the population up over the course of the next 5 years.
Were you surprised by the numbers you saw in the most recent deer hunt season that closed in November?
I have been looking at this for about a year now, so I was anticipating that the numbers were going to be down again. I didn't expect them to be down quite as much. It was a pretty big jump this year. So I looked at, if you look at Burnett County, I'm the representative for the all of Burnett County, and the numbers from 2018 to this year are down 26%. So in only 5 years, the harvest has gone down 26%. And the number of tags that are being issued is also down, but it's not even close to that percentage. So there's an obvious issue in northwestern Wisconsin, and I think throughout a lot of the state, maybe not the southern and southwestern part of the state as much because there's so much farmland and there's not as much predation. But I do think that this packet of bills that I'm working on is going to be really beneficial for everyone in the state.
You, along those lines, you support a measure in the legislature that received a public hearing would require the State Department of Natural Resources to extend online hunter education programs to people under age 18. Why do you support this expansion to kids?
I took my first hunter safety class when it was at my high school, or I'm sorry, excuse me, at my middle school, when I think I was probably 12. So I think that the interest in hunting, because of this new technology-driven sort of society, is decreasing in our youth. And I think that anything that we can do to really get people interested in the outdoors, interested in conservation, interested in wildlife, is a positive, good thing for everyone in the area.
We're talking to Angie Sapik about her first term as Wisconsin's 73rd District Representative. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I want to turn to taxes. Governor Tony Evers vetoed a Republican-backed $2 billion tax cut after the measure passed the legislature. Why did you vote for the tax cut?
I think it's really important that the government doesn't keep people's money hostage. And the reason that the state has this much money in the first place is the past biennium of Republican legislators that have brought this money into the state. We are positive. There's a lot of money there. But The idea is that you have money, it's available, you can use it to better the state. But at the end of the day, what's left after you've done all the programs and all of the things that really need the assistance from the state, the bottom line is it's your money. So it's, you know, it's basically a loan program. Here's your taxes, you pay your taxes in, and the state takes what they need and then give the rest back to the people that have worked hard for those dollars, particularly in a time where our economy is in a pretty bad position. You know, it costs $6 for a dozen eggs, which we never thought we would see. This inflation is really affecting people, particularly around the holidays right now. I've seen that people are having a really hard time. So my bottom line, as far as taxes are concerned, is I really believe that it's your money and the government shouldn't be in charge of how that money is spent in its entirety. It should be your money in the form of refunds. And another really big thing that the governor is pushing forward, and he's saying, you know, this is a tax break for the rich, and it kind of goes along that sort of a diatribe. But I believe, if I remember right, that tax break starts at $28,000 per year.
And for individuals.
Right, for individuals. So I don't believe that someone who's making $28,000 a year fits in that window of someone who's incredibly wealthy. So they should get their money back. Absolutely.
Yeah, that window, $27,630 to $304,170 for individuals. Of that package, child care tax credit, it was countered, earlier proposal made by Governor Evers that would have spent $365 million on child care. Are you advocating for future child care legislation? Where do we go from here?
Well, there's a couple of things that are involved in the child care situation. One is child care counts, which was brought forward when COVID happened. So it was one of those programs that came forward that was intended to help people in a situation that we had no idea what was going on. We're in the middle of a pandemic. People are pulling their kids from daycare. They're having to pay for daycare when they're not there just to help the daycare workers stay in operation. I was a big part of that, because my kids at that time were only, I believe, 2 and 3. So I was in the throes of this daycare problem. Child care counts came in and it helped these daycare companies survive. But now we're finding that this extension, to keep extending this child care counts program, it's not actually helping the daycares to survive. So what's happening in my area in particular, in the city of Superior, they've given out a number of grants to local daycares that are available. So the daycares apply for these grants and you get up to, you know, from $2,000 to $5,000 as a little bit of a boost. But the bottom line also is, you know, these are private businesses and government is not supposed to be entirely in charge of private businesses. Come in and help where it's necessary. Talk to your representatives. If this is an overwhelming need, then the money will be there. But the bottom line at this point is the government giving money to these businesses is not actually helping them succeed. They're still faltering. So we have to come at this from a different angle.
So in turn, though, without funding or support like that, they would need to raise tuition. Where do they turn to shore up their budgets? I mean, it is basically their customers, which are the families who are relying on them for daycare. So what do you... Can you just continue to ask for more and more tuition there?
I think that they have to ask for more money. And I did talk to the daycare that had my kids, because my kids are now, they've since graduated out of daycare. But I did talk to them about putting a plan forward so that kids that are currently in don't have to pay more, but the new kids that are coming in have to pay the newer rate. So you get sort of a grandfathered rate, because there is such a turnaround of children. Especially people who, you know, you switch daycares, you find one that's a little less expensive, closer to home. This way, it helps daycares to keep the same kids in the same position because they're grandfathered in at this specific rate. And it sets the precedence for new parents that this is what the rate is going to be going forward, because you have to follow the inflation. You can't keep those rates stagnant. You have to follow the economy.
Republican Representative Angie Sapik, serving her first term in the Assembly. The 73rd District is in the northwest corner of the state. As we explore Sapik's legislative priorities, be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report in the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Representative Angie Sapik, a first-term Republican in the Assembly. We dig into her bills, other legislation she backs. The 73rd District is in the far northwest corner of the state with a border on Lake Superior. You can join the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You are vice chair for the Assembly Committee on Labor and Integrated Employment. And last month, the committee held a public hearing on two bills. One proposal would allow teens to get employment without a permit. Do you support this legislation?
I absolutely do. I think that this is something that's going to be really positive. And this is another thing in this new technologically driven society, to get kids out of the house, into the workplace, you know, into their communities. I think it's excellent practice for being in the workforce as an adult. When I was 14, I think I had three jobs, and most of them were, you know, you're waitressing the fish fry. I had a work permit because I was working at Culver's as the shake girl. And those are really fun, great experiences. I think that this is an absolutely positive thing.
Would this measure reduce how much control that parents or guardians have over their children working?
I don't think so. This just allows children to be able to go to work, but the parents are still in charge of whether or not your child has a job. I mean, actually, I've never even heard that argument. This sort of doesn't really make sense to me. If you have a 14-year-old at home, I would anticipate that you would have enough say over what your child is doing that you could determine whether or not they had the freedom to work. This just gives the freedom from the state so that they can go and they can be, you know, a positive drive in the workforce.
The other bill reviewed by the committee would prohibit employers from requiring vaccines as a condition of employment. Why should the state government be limiting the rights of business owners in these decisions?
I don't know why the government should be in control of forcing anyone to have a vaccine in the first place. I think that puts me back on the freedom train, where I don't believe that the government should be in charge of forcing people to put things in their bodies. And this gives people the freedom that it's not a requirement. So I believe that that never should have happened in the first place. It's just no place for government to be.
So the legislature being involved on regulating immunizations, that you think is not a place where state lawmakers should be involved in?
I think that this is a little more of an experimental sort of a vaccine. And when you're talking about something as far as maybe the measles, it's a completely different animal. I don't think that you can lump all these vaccines into one tidy package.
I want to return to conservation. And you're a leading author of legislation passed by the Assembly and Senate that would require the State Department of Natural Resources to produce a plan every 2 years establishing priorities and goals for habitat work. Why are you an advocate for this additional reporting to the legislature?
I think that this is a really positive thing, and it's a positive thing for the DNR, because you're putting together a plan, you're getting support from your community. By having a plan that's public, that has the ability to be scrutinized, which, you know, it can be a good or bad thing, but I think overall is probably a positive thing, because you're getting people more involved in what the DNR is actually doing, whether they're working with marshlands in your community or if you're trying to figure out where these funds are allocated, if they're being allocated and used correctly. I think that the ability to have some public input there is a positive thing.
What are your concerns with how the DNR is currently managing habitats in northwestern Wisconsin?
I don't know that it's necessarily that it's mismanagement. I think that this is just an oversight that they should have some sort of a plan together for just for pure organization and public input.
And you feel like it's not additional red tape here in order to put together plans like this, to publish them. That doesn't require additional staffing or it's not additional workload.
Well, I suppose that you could call it a little bit more red tape, but if this is the position that the DNR is in, where they're already doing these things, and they basically, the argument is that they already have a plan put together, it's just publicizing it. So it's really not something that they're not already doing. They already have a plan together. It's just making sure that people know what's going on so they can follow the timeline.
We're talking with Representative Angie Sapik about her first term in Wisconsin's 73rd district as a representative. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You are a co-author of several bills involving gender in sports, healthcare, and corrections. One bill would require college sports teams to group athletes based on their sex assigned at birth. And another bill would prohibit some medical care for transgender kids and teens. And then another would limit strip searches by law enforcement to be based on sex assigned at birth. Why is gender a priority for your policy agenda in the Capitol?
So, I think that we're sort of losing track on this on a national level, which is, whatever is going on the federal level is difficult to control. But what we can control is what's happening in the state of Wisconsin. And I think that we, let me revert back here. I have never considered myself to be a feminist in my entire life. I am grateful for feminism. I believe that it paved the way for me to be in the position that I am today. But I think the line has moved so far left that the Republicans have become the new feminists now. So, in the name of equality, we've lost who women and girls and females actually are and their purpose and their softness and their strength and empowering women. But by putting women and men together in sports and just lumping them together in a number of different ways is really harmful for females. And I think it really takes away their voice in a way that has never been taken away before since the 20s, 30s, and 40s, where women are becoming so empowered. And like I said, have paved the way to put me in this position so that I can be a voice for them. So the new feminism line is where I'm at. And I think that the far left has really lost that. And in doing so, they're doing a lot of harm to young girls.
So do you support banning gender-affirming care for transgender people of all ages or only children?
Oh, no, absolutely not. If you are a 20-year-old female and you are struggling mentally, and you believe that you're in the wrong body, and you want to have these procedures, and you want to take these hormone blockers and hormone supplements. I have met people who are transgender. I feel for them. I think that this is something that you have to really treat with delicate hands because it's a very, very delicate situation to be in. But that being said, I don't believe that a 14-year-old should be able to have the right to take puberty blockers and maybe potentially make a disastrous decision for their life that they're not prepared mentally to make.
So then, how should state government better support transgender people in Wisconsin?
I think that creating the line is probably a good start. So you can support people who are trying to transition, and all we already do. You're an adult. You have the freedom to make these decisions. That's not necessarily a state. That's not where state even could or has to intervene. That's you're an adult. You make those decisions yourself. The only thing the state is coming in to do right now is come in and say, if you're a child, you're not 18, you're living with your parents, you cannot make these decisions without parental advice, some of these decisions. And it's not because you have a lot of parents who are also pushing these things on kids who might not actually be in this position had it not been for the devouring mother. I think that it's important that we protect the kids, number one. But the second thing that you said is we're talking about
And very quickly here,
collegiate sports. I'm sorry, go ahead.
we're running out of time here, so very quickly.
So you talked about collegiate sports also, but the money from the state goes into the colleges. So for the state to come in and say, hey, you know what? We don't think this is right. A lot of the funding for those programs comes in from the state. So
We have to end
if we
it there. Republican Representative Angie Sapik of Wisconsin's 73rd District. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.